A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Have you all seen the trailer for the sloth killer, sloth movie sloth thing?
Against my will, because you showed me it 30 seconds ago, Scott Tilford.
Hey, I didn't do it.
Yeah, I was just going to stay quiet, but yeah.
Yeah, the word sloth did the rounds for a bit. There's we got asked about this anyway from Mr. JC. I'll also say this is the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. I'm joined by Cy White and Josh Brown. Cy, how you doing?
I'm all good.
Lovely stuff. Josh, how you doing?
Yeah, better now I've seen this trailer, to be honest.
See, we talked about in Slack when we sent this to each other. I was just saying I can't get away with the whole it's so bad, it's good thing. I remember being life-scarred by The Room, mainly because my now wife, then girlfriend, didn't tell me that it was terrible. She was just, oh, it's brilliant, you've got to see it. There's nothing else like it. Oh, my God, you've got to see it. And then being sat in the cinema, realizing what that movie was, I think that just completely awakened the side of me that was like, no, this is a living hell torture device and I need to get out. I hate anything like that.
No,
badly done.
I like The Room, but when you look at this trailer, it's like, it's trying to be rubbish. It's yeah. Like, it's just like, no, that's not fun. It's only funny when it's accidentally crap.
Yeah, that was the thing. I was like, I get what you're going for. It's like a bit, it does its thing. And then I'm kind of just out of it again. I thought that about, what we do in the Shadows one as well?
Oh.
I know that's not in the same in ballpark. But I was just like, this thing would work better. It was like a 2 minute YouTube skit or like a YouTube short or something. I don't need the full thing.
Do get that a lot. And I'm with your side. Like when something's, you know, intentionally trying to be a so bad it's a good thing, then no, I need that level of earnestness to it in order for it to hit that level and make me endeared to it. If you're trying to copy The Room or whatever it is, I think, no, that's artificial and it's not very good. That said, going into the sloth trailer, Slotherhouse as it's called, expecting it to be one of those, I was kind of surprised that it had actual jokes, and the jokes made me laugh. It reminded me more of Megan from earlier this year. In the trailer, the sloth is on social media. The sloth is like blending into the dolls. Slothful media. And I can go for that. If it's a sloth trying to be a human influencer, I'm kind of on board.
See, that bit where it shows it, it's like a mastermind that it's like, look, it's on the computer and stuff. That was when it broke me, because I was like, I would rather it was a regular sloth with regular sloth abilities and they're all terrified of it and it's coming for them really slowly anyway.
My issue is, having seen Cocaine Bear earlier this year and hearing so much about it and being incredibly disappointed because it wasn't silly enough for me, these things need to go full on silly. They can't get by with what you just said of like a title and a premise alone, because then, yeah, they might as well just be a trailer. You need something to sustain it for 90 minutes, I reckon.
It's true. I brought this question in specifically. Obviously, the sloth trailer is doing the rounds on social media at the minute. And also, Wanted Dead is one of this year's, I would say, worst games by a considerable margin. I think Josh would also agree, but he quite likes it. And Si, I don't know if you've seen this game. But it's like,
I'm just about vaguely aware of it, to be honest.
It's like this thing, it's from a bunch of ex-Ninja Gaiden and Dead or Alive developers, and they've sort of tried to make like a throwback to like kind of like late PS2, early 360 era action games, which should be right up my street, and it absolutely is not. And I know Josh, you're liking it a hell of a lot more than I am.
I am, and I'm going to talk to you, don't you worry, brother. I'm going to talk to you at length about this on Monday's wind-up, but I'll give everyone a little tease now because I finished this the other night. And that
you did it in two sittings?
Oh,
one
sitting? Going into this game, I'd heard so much about it being this so bad, it's good, weird, piece of art, right? And I was well up for that. I did not expect to play it for 6 hours straight and really enjoy the combat. That was a huge surprise to me. Yeah, this
I don't
is...
even think the developers played it for 6 hours straight, let alone the public.
Maybe not. This is a... I should add, by the way, we actually got copies of this game sent through, so
yes.
That was really nice. So
massive thank you.
I've got to experience this without the kind of price barrier to it. But even then, I really enjoyed it for its earnestness that we were just talking about. Like, it's genuinely weird. It's not artificially weird. It's not like, you know, a corporate attempt at being weird. It's weird through and through. It does not make sense. I don't understand 90% of it. And yet, had a lot more fun with it than I did another game that came out this year, maybe by the name of Final Fantasy 16. That's not necessarily true, though it is in part.
Shock horror.
That's a tease for next week.
I fully expected this reality to unfold before our very eyes. But yes, I mentioned before, this is the Untitled Partner Podcast. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions, talking points, etc. So we'll get through as many as we can. First one from George Jackson, who says, "Hello, legends. Who is the most consistent developer in terms of great games, in your opinion? It's Naughty Dog for me alongside Insomniac. Also, with Talk To Me being fantastic, 2023 is shaping up to be a great horror movie year. So what's been your favourite horror so far?" Cy, most consistent developer in favourite horror.
I'm just going to say the Cy answer at the moment. I think it's Capcom or like just
on
a new level that they've never really been on before. They're probably better now than they perhaps ever have been. Because, yeah, everybody's really excited about new Street Fighter. Resident Evil's really strong. They haven't made too many like big mistakes with it. All the rubbish stuff has just been a little like pointless multiplayer spin-offs. But in terms of the big land, you know, tentpole titles have all been good. Monster Hunter is probably bigger than it's ever been as well. So, yeah.
I wish Exo Primal was all right.
It's
all right, I guess.
But... That's a good point, us. Yeah, okay. Point
that's like the only misstep, though. They're sort of doing a beautiful gazelle-like sprint and they've sort of like hit a twig or something. That's about it. For the most part, it's all right. Josh, are you having as the most consistent?
All great shouts so far. Like, my brain goes to Naughty Dog, but I think in terms of pure consistency and pure volume, it's got to be From Software for me, because they've released, you know, 7 or 8 games plus DLC over the past decade or so, and all of them have been bangers for me. Even Dark Souls 2, which I know has a bad reputation in some parts of the internet, but I really enjoyed. Got to that game way late when all the discourse had died down and managed to just enjoy it. So yeah, they've not missed for me. And I think in terms of producing not only great games, but some of my favorite games of all time, they're on a crazy run. Every other one they release seems to like etch its way into my top 20 of all time somehow.
I think for me, like, yeah, my default is Insomniac, so I do think they are the best developer on planet Earth right now. I think they are incredibly consistent. However, I'll shout out Supergiant, because I feel like they've only gone strength to strength, like just going from Bastion to Transistor to Pyre to Hades. Like, Hades was unbelievable and still is. Hades 2, I think, is next year. But I just think, like, artistic integrity and the game mechanics and stuff that they have, they're just such memorable games, and they've only gone, like I said, strength to strength. Let's have a round of horrors. I've seen Talk To Me, which was really, really good. I don't know if, Sai, have you got any horror recommendations or not?
No.
Not a single one.
I'm afraid not. I don't watch it. It's not. I tend to steer. I'm weird. I think I might have talked about this before. If I see like a clip from a horror movie online or something, what I will do is just go on Wikipedia and read the plot and then go, cool, glad I didn't watch that.
Andy Murray kind of does that. I was going to say he's fine with horror games, but he's just like, get it away from me. It'll terrify me. I won't sleep for days. Just move it away from me. That's fine. Josh, any horrors of the year?
Oh, man, I'm rubbing my hands and licking my lips at this question, because give me an excuse to talk about horror movies, which I often get over on the What Culture Horror channel, by the way. Should check that out.
Plug.
Talk To Me was great. You know, that was my most anticipated of the year, was looking forward to that a lot, and it managed to hit those expectations. Maybe my favourite time in the cinema this year, with all of the moments, let's say, that occur in that film that certainly raise the hairs on your skin, let's say. That was amazing. I really enjoyed Scream 6. I know a lot of people don't as much as the other movies, and I definitely agree that it has a disappointing ending, but that was another surprise where I was so-so on Scream 5. I thought it was all right, and then Scream 6 for the first 2/3 completely blew me away in terms of its tenacity and its violence and how nasty it got. I thought that was really, really fun. There's been a few others. Evil Dead Rise was another big one. I watched one called The Bone Woman, which was really, really good as well. I think it's been a good start for horror, and there's a lot of good stuff on the horizon, hopefully, like the last voyage of the Demeter and Saw X's this year, you know?
Oh my God, there is a new Saw this
there's
year.
There's a new Scott. I'm like the sickos, yes, ha 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 meme at that, because for as bad as those movies get and for as convoluted as they get, like, I love that, and I like that this one is set between Saw 2 and 3, so we're going back to John Kramer and Amanda from like the early part of the series, and I like that this one is just kind of saying, he's a Jigsaw side quest that we never talked about, and hopefully they have fun with it.
That whole thing where, yeah, I used to be like a huge Saw fan. I mean, you've talked about it in real life before, but it's one of those things where, like, I don't know, I don't know what they do for Saw 10. I hope they bring Dr. Gordon back. I know that like five people care about Saw lore, but of all the things that you can do to do like a really good 10th installment, I feel like you need to go all the way. I mean, they've already brought him back once, but just do like the full plot thing. Show he was involved from the beginning, almost, or whatever you need to do. Yeah, Man Would Just Be Talking to Me as well. I blanked that Scream was this year. In fact, I don't even think I could tell you what else came out this year. I think I still have pandemic brain. It's all just one blur or a flat circle. Next question from Josh. Oh, sorry, carry on.
If you will permit me, just a quick plug. I actually did my favorite horror movies of the year so far over on What Culture Horror. It was before Talk to Me came out. That would be number one now, but there's my full list because I've no doubt I've forgotten almost all of them, which is not good, but yes, please watch it though.
Everyone keeps talking about it, and I watched the trailer, I will admit, and I was like, I actually feel like I could enjoy this. Maybe not on the big screen. I might scream myself into oblivion if I watch it on a big screen. But in a more comfortable environment, like, it appeals to the Evil Dead fan in me. Like, I might have to give it a go.
Initially, I thought it looked like way too hokey, like this sort of paper mache hand thing. But it was one of those things where I just saw the reviews and Josh like vouched for it. So I was like, fine, I'll give it a shot. And yeah, it's brilliant. I'll say it's the best horror of the year, mainly because I can't remember any of the horrors from this year. But it is very good. Question from Josh Sloan, who says, Happy UB3, as convenient as using fast travel can be, does it also indicate that a game world is inherently uninteresting if we want to skip journeying through it? That's like a gaming habits thing. Like, do you tend to skip once you've got fast travel unlocked?
Once I've been through an area enough, then I will, you know, if I'm just mopping things up. But what I like is a game that doesn't initially give you fast travel, then might give you it later on. So it kind of encourages you to explore the world, and then it'll say, okay, now you've seen 90% of the map, we can let you go back and forth. My biggest bugbear about modern Assassin's Creed games and kind of Ubisoft games in general is that the maps almost seem designed to be skipped. There's so much blank space in those games, in my opinion. Like, I hate it when you're just kind of roaming through an endless forest that appears to be copied and pasted and there's nothing interesting to see. It just kind of feels like you're wasting your time, whereas my preferred approach to open world games is what Rockstar does in giving you some kind of fast travel systems. Like, maybe you can jump on a train and it'll take you to a different point in the map, but they really encourage you to live in that space, to memorize those streets, to get familiar with the iconography, and kind of work your way around the environment in the way that you would do a real life environment almost. And I always prefer that. If I come away from an open world game not remembering the open world, I kind of feel like that's a fundamental failing of it.
Yeah, that's true. So much stuff. I feel like over the years, there was like the advent of like Speed Tree and all these sort of auto-generative systems across the late 2000s, early 2010s and stuff. And yeah, I will fast travel everywhere. It depends what I'm doing, but it's like, I'll give you a map like a once through. And then it's a certain size where I can't remember it the same way. We've talked about this loads over the years, but I always prefer the original 3D GTA maps because they're so much more like little toy boxes and I can remember everything and I can take advantage of all those different routes and make my own shortcuts and everything else. Whereas something like GTA 5 or Red Dead Redemption 2, I couldn't tell you how that map comes together other than the vaguest regions of it. But Si, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree on all points there. And what you were saying about like sort of baked in parts of games where it's like the fast travel makes sense and stuff like that's really cool. Like with Spider-Man in particular, the maps are not particularly big, are they? But I did I kind of wish they'd taken out the option to fast travel in the menu and you just have to go to a subway station if you really want to do it. Like, that was like doing that out. Was kind of cute and like but yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of it just being in the options as well.
My thing's like with the new systems and the SSD and all the auto instant loading stuff, like I love in Final Fantasy 16 how it's just pick a place, you're there in like a second. Yeah. And like, to me, that encourages me to do side quests and dip in, do a little bit and jump over here and do everything else. And I quite like that sort of like late game rush of just mopping everything up and darting between like 20 different things and clearing it all up. So like, in a way, I kind of encourage fast travel, but it definitely is at odds with the idea of an immersive open world.
Yes.
But it needs to give you some something to get from place to place. If the actual traversal was fun, like the wingsuit in Spidey 2 should be really fun, or swinging in Spidey was really fun anyway, then that I think there has to be more of an impetus on, like, how am I getting from place to place? You're, if it's just running or whatever, then
So spot on, because I just keep going back to the Horizon games, and like Horizon Zero Dawn, I basically didn't fast travel until, as just said, at the end of the game, where I was just like picking up collectibles and stuff, and I was like, I just need to be here, here, and here, and then I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because it was a PS4 game, the loading screens were a lot more noticeable compared to something like Forbidden West on PS5, where it is pretty much instantaneous, which kind of made me, like you said, Scott, I'll go through it once or twice maybe, and then I'm like, ah, unless there's an objective on my path towards the place I'm actually getting to, I might as well just fast travel. So I did it a lot in the second game, up until the point they gave me the flying mount right at the end of the game. If that had come
at the
sooner,
end of the game.
If that had come sooner, I would have basically never fast traveled, because it's so quick to move around the world and really cool, just because it's obviously a gorgeous open world. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing you're missing out on from going through it, you know, multiple times, running back and forth. Being able to fly over all of it, which is spectacular. So yeah, give me that earlier. Come on.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they did that. Like, I had like some side stuff to do. I was doing that game for review anyway, so I sort of just got through it for the review, but then at the end I was like, well, why not just give me this at least a couple of hours ago or something. Question from Jack Jingle, who says, I play a lot of point and click adventure titles, and I recently heard it described as a cozy genre, hence its niche popularity, which I quite liked. What other genres fit that bill, and are any games coming to mind? I feel like the cozy genre is exploding at the minute. I feel like I see it on all sorts of storefronts now in a way that I didn't before, and it makes me realize that whole, like, oh, the companies have realized thing, where like there's enough Stardew clones, or there's enough sort of farming sims in general, or enough sort of like repetitive style games where they can box it in and be like, oh, isn't this like a love, laugh, live sign made interactive or whatever? And there's something about that that always makes me go, oh no, you've made it to company corpo. But it's not to discount the quality of those games. Stardew Valley, I've got like 400 hours in. But yeah, what are each of you, I guess, like, what do you think about that stuff?
Yeah, it's funny. You just described like 80% of Nintendo Directs. They're just farming simulator Directs. Yeah. There's so many of them.
Harvestella.
Yeah, because as you say, so many companies have realized that they're successful with Stardew and Animal Crossing as well. Obviously quite similar, different enough, but that's always came across to me as incredibly cozy.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what I think is an emerging genre, which I don't know if what we're calling it, but it's the Vampire Survivors genre. I feel like that's sort of
mindless kind of...
Yeah, because it's like Vampire Survivors is one, and then there's the new Tomb Raider that's on mobile, and there's the new Doom game on mobile, and they all play like Vampire Survivors. They're all automated, and you're just moving through power-ups to then trigger bigger sets of animations from the middle of the screen kind of thing.
They're kind of like old shmups in a weird way, aren't they?
Yeah, kind of like shmups. It's like they called it like a reverse bullet hell or something, because everything's coming outwards from you.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that just got added, I think, to Game Pass or maybe Nintendo Switch, where it's called something else Survivors. And I was like, oh, it's another one of them. And I was like, oh, is this like the Survivors genre? Because I feel like the Souls genre took ages to be named, and we sort of call it Soulsborne, or Soulsborne Kiro did the rounds like across 2019 for a bit. But Josh, what do you think of all this cozy nonsense?
My girlfriend is absolutely in love with cozy games, and she gets all of her recommendations from the cozy games TikTok out there, who recommend all of these. She sadly does not, but she does like a few of these titles, including one that you've just played, Scott Tilford. She's looking forward to, is it the cooking one that you've just been through?
Vember?
Yes.
Oh, Vember's incredible, yeah.
Which looks amazing. I just kind of like anything with a nice cozy vibe and a nice little narrative, probably about family, maybe about cooking, to kind of get lost in. I think it's just a nice thing to play kind of after work, really relaxing, really good. She played one in June, which is actually on my radar now, and I'm definitely going to get to it at some point. I can't remember the name, but it's about...
Is it Dordogne?
Yeah. Can you say that again? Because I forget how to pronounce it.
I think it's pronounced Dordogne. It's like Dordogne.
Yeah, Dordogne. It's about a French, named after a French town, I think. And it's about this family and this person's relationship with their grandma. And it's kind of like told through memory. And it's about like grief and kind of loss and all of that good stuff. And that, ever since you talked about that, I'm like, I need to play that game. You know, it sounds really interesting. So I'm kind of all for cozy games. I think, you know, the fact that these storefronts have kind of finally become clued into that kind of ability, or that kind of framing and that kind of subgenre, I guess you could call it, is cool, because get them all grouped together, make sure people like me who don't go on TikTok know that they exist, and maybe I'll be able to play them and get them recommended to me.
My thing is, yeah, I love cozy games. I mean, I love farming games for the most part. It's just like, it's just that thing where you realize that they've been noticed, like the nice little innocent thing's been noticed. And obviously, I mean, Stardew was like 7 years ago, so it's like, it's a long time coming. But I feel like when we, like Si said, when you watch the Nintendo streams, like every other game is a farming sim. Mm-hmm. There was a recent, I think maybe it was Nintendo's, or maybe it was one of the Xbox ones or the PlayStation ones, where like 80% of the game shown had farming mechanics or some sort of harvest mechanic thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But yeah, overall, I just because Josh mentioned Vember, that game's gorgeous. I hugely recommend it. Like you said, it's based around cooking, but there's some really good narrative stuff in there about what cooking means to people. I think if you're a foodie, it's essential. And I think they do so many nice little things with the game mechanics in regards to how you make the recipes. I did that thing in one sitting. It's not very long, about an hour, if that. But it's very recommendable. A question from Gigantor, who says, do you think the PlayStation 5 handheld will be a flop? Also, is the PSVR 2 even worth it at the current price? It's the price of a PS5.
Everything Sony makes that isn't like a mainline console is kind of a flop, right? Like, they just have no interest in supporting their peripherals or their kind of side consoles or their handhelds or whatever. So I can't imagine that even though I'm looking forward to it, that this PS5 handheld is going to sell like a Nintendo handheld would, or even their own handheld would, if they put the kind of effort into marketing that they do everything else that they do and makes up their business. It's such a shame, man.
Yeah. Sai, what do you think of it's called the Cube Lite or something? It's the stream only tablet
Q
thing.
Yeah. Who asked this question? Sorry, what was their name?
This is from Gigantor.
Do not do Sony the diligence of calling it a handheld. It's not a handheld, is it? Was the Wii U a handheld? It's not. It's just a controller.
Just because you picked it up.
It's like you can't go anywhere with it. Rubbish. That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I know that's just an obvious, opinion, but like, I think everyone just went, What is this?
Well, okay,
I remember we're talking for weeks beforehand about a new Sony handheld, and it was just, a controller that had eaten a screen. It was just rubbish.
I was going to say, what did you think of the design of it? Like, because me and Josh went back and forward on it, because obviously there is a really, like, obvious usability to it. I personally hate the thing because it looks terrible to me, but, like, I totally get the usability side of it.
I'm being harsh on it. I mean, for accessibility and stuff like that, it might be really cool. It does not have mass market appeal, and I think that's probably going to become readily apparent when they stop bothering to do any marketing for it very quickly, because I just don't think people, you know, wider gaming wise, it's not, you know, totally worthless, as I say, but it's not a major player in the sort of Sony ecosystem, if you like.
I'm kind of like, I'm fascinated by, because obviously right now in real time, you could go stream something to your phone or a tablet or any other screen or whatever you want to do. And so I'm curious, and it's not a perfect system. Like whenever I've tried it in the past, I tried playing Spider-Man on my phone and it does kind of, you get a bit of screen tearing, you know, it's not this incredible experience. And so I'm curious because I'm pretty sure I keep wanting to call it the Cupid, but that's what the thing in Death Stranding is called, but this Q system thing. I wonder if that has whatever tech inside to somehow smooth it over. Like, I don't think so, because it pretty much just is, like you said, a tablet with a controller sliced onto
it. It's just occurred to me what this is, isn't it? Because you can get Game Pass on your phone and just play it with your Xbox controller. This is basically what this is their response to that. That just never occurred to me. That's clearly what this is.
All Sony ever does is just... like look at a thing that's working and go, we can do a bit of that but cheaper, like the PlayStation VR motion controllers just being the old the ones or whatever, but there is that,
not anymore. The PSVR 2 for the second part of this question, it is worth that amount of money, and I'd go one step further, you know, and I'd say the reason it's worth that amount of money is because there are more VR exclusive games to play right now than there probably are PS5 exclusive games to play right now.
That's a really good point.
Exclusive to the PSVR 2, but VR as a whole, you know, you jump into that ecosystem and there's so much to get lost in. Like, I've barely scratched the surface of the releases this year just because I've been trying to keep up with regular console releases, but every month when they announce, you know, what's coming for those couple of weeks, I always just kind of get a pang of anxiety because I want to play them, but there's too much to get through. And I think it's a really good piece of kit as well. I think it's really impressive.
I wish this is what they launched with.
Yeah.
Like if this is what they had back in, was it 2017 for the first one?
Yes, I think so. Resi 7 was 2017, right? So it must have been the same time. So.
Like, if they'd launched with this, they would have made such waves. Like, it would be, like, the essential, oh, my God, you're plugging into another world kind of thing, which I know this is. But I think the price puts some people off, or, like, the lack of more first-party stuff, I guess. Maybe when they finally get there with that, it'll be an easier sell. But the tech is incredible. Jack Antor also said that they've seen the rumors about a God of War 1 remake. They're the biggest God of War fan, and I don't want this. Yes, modern remakes are great, but some games need to be left alone, which I also wanted to throw in. There's a question from the 213th Gunner of 2023, who says, when is it acceptable to remake a game? Remakes like the Super Mario RPG feel fresh and exciting because the original is 27 years old, but The Last of Us feels like a cheap money grab due to its relative recentness. I said 2 there because Last of Us 2 remake is also apparently coming. The Horizon remake is also apparently coming as well. But it's like, where do you draw the line on it, I guess?
Ooh, go on, Si.
I mean, yeah, it's an interesting one because it's like, is it a console generation thing or is it an amount of time thing? And when you look at something like The Last of Us, which turned 10 this summer, only just. When you go back 10 years ago to when The Last of Us was new, in that case, Super Mario RPG is that example. It was already 17 years old. So I would have taken an RPG, a remake for Super Mario RPG then, let alone now.
That's true.
So maybe it's sort of around 15 years, because you've got to think, if The Last of Us is 10 years now, in 5 years' time, we're probably at the start of the next console generation, at which point it might have been more appropriate. Whereas now, everyone quite rightfully went, it's a little bit soon. And we're not having
the big...
another
one.
Exactly. Well, there's that as well, we're not having the big jump in graphical fidelity or whatever, obviously, that we had sort of in the early 2000s and stuff like that, and it sort of necessitates remakes as much as... Yeah, because the difference between The Last of Us and The Last of Us Part 1 was kind of meh, you know, meh, whatever.
I think the thing with, like, remaking... The thing is, I kind of literally just think it's the cash grab stuff. It's just sort of like, we can do this and you'll pay it. Like, it's every other company noticing what Nintendo do. And we talked about this on the main podcast this week about just how much Nintendo get away with. And I feel like it's other companies like Sony going, like, we can put another version of this out and charge. And it's whatever that price tag is how much of a backlash there is. But The Last of Us PS5 PS5 version did sell really well. I think obviously it was, they needed something alongside the TV show and stuff, and what they wanted to. And so for me, I think they're just testing the waters. Like if they did another upgraded version of anything that came out on PlayStation 4, like the original God of War, sorry, the 2018 God of War, then you can just do a PS5 version and then charge for it. They tried with the director's cuts, and then they've done the Last of Us stuff, and it's like the price fluctuates each time, but I think they're just trying to see what they can actually get away with.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, I mean, there's so many different factors. One for me is just how accessible is the original game anyway?
Yeah.
And with The Last of Us, you know, that got a remaster on PS4 that was, you know, really solid and still held up by the time Part 1, the remake, came along. You know, it was readily available. People were still buying it. It was there. So I feel like that definitely put people off. I feel like if The Last of Us was stuck on the PS3, people would have been way more open to the full remake treatment that soon, because, you know, who's going to go out and buy a PlayStation 3 to play one game that's locked on it? Looking at you, Metal Gear Solid 4, you know what I mean? But that having it be on every platform, I think definitely put people off, and rightly so. And it kind of sucks because Part 1 is a great game and it's a great remake, I think, but it's way too soon. It's definitely unneeded, and I can totally sympathize with the backlash to it because it does feel like a cash grab, even though I would argue that love has been poured into the development. I think from the top down, people were definitely looking at it and going, we've got a TV show, we've got The Last of Us Part 2 that we kind of want to hit parity with. Why don't we get, you know, this thing out? On the other hand, I think time doesn't necessarily matter if you're doing something ambitious with a remake. You know, for me, Resident Evil 4 remake, though it has a lot of similarities with the original, obviously, is such a hugely different beast that if that game came out 5 years after the original or 10 years after the original, I kind of wouldn't have batted an eyelid. Same as the GameCube version of Resident Evil, you know, Resident Evil 1, that came out like quite shortly.
Six years
after the original.
Yeah, crazy.
And I'm sure there was a backlash at the time, but now it kind of feels like it's not even brought into the equation, I don't think, because it is such a different beast and it is such an overhaul that you can kind of appreciate it. And you can, more importantly, I think, see where your money's going, which I think is integral to, like you said, Scott, like what people accept and what people don't.
Yeah, I think like down that regard, it's the, does it feel like it needed it? Does it feel like there's more to that vision that we didn't get? Like the original Resident Evil is like obviously blocky as hell. It's loved, it's so charming, and everyone fell in love with it and everything, but it is very blocky. Like there's the weird stilted voice acting, again, very charming, but whatever. There's like things you can go back to and tweak it a bit. Whereas like Horizon and like doing another version of The Last of Us 2, well, these sort of already super cinematic, high quality, already expensive full price games, get the backlash because people are just like, well, they're already complete. What else are you going to do other than just sell us this again, but it's a bit shinier or a bit better frame rate or whatever? Whereas like the Super Mario RPG, that's an interesting one right now because there are some circles across like social media on the Nintendo forums and stuff, on Reddit and stuff, saying like, this is a really old game. Like obviously it's from the early 90s. The guts of it are going to be the same. We're going to be paying £60 or whatever dollars just for a lick of paint. Now that's going to be a whole thing when it's released, but
yeah,
Si, what do you think about
I don't know. No, I don't remember if it ever got onto the Wii Shop or whatever.
It's on the SNES Mini, but I think that's
right.
It.
Right, okay. Because I know obviously being developed by Square in partnership with Nintendo property, it makes it a tad more difficult to do these kinds of things. But yeah, to that point of the original games, it's an N64 game. I'm kind of glad if it's going to be run basically the same but shiny, because I've never had a chance to play it. And
And
Josh, to your point, that's exactly why. I just want a chance to play it. Just give me the ability to play it. Whereas something like, you know, part of this, the beginning of this conversation was about the original God of War games. I don't need a remake of those. Just make them available to play.
I feel like a Masters collection,
like the MGS. I hope a lot of things look at that, you know, Masterpiece Collection or whatever it's called, the Metal Gear Solid one, and go, oh, we can just do one of them. Just do that with God of War and I will buy it day one. For the first
yeah,
three
I
games.
Would agree. I think it's just that there's a room for opportunity there where I think some business person sort of leans in the room and goes, are you charging for that? Are you just doing a frame rate availability?
Yeah.
Are we just relisting it? Are we not going to charge for it? Because they will pay it. And I feel like that's what they keep trying and we keep paying for it. So it just keeps coming out that way. I quite like what Sony started doing with the director's cut stuff. Like we got Ghost of Tsushima, we got Death Stranding, and I think that's been it. But there's a hope with Last of Us 2 coming around again that maybe we'll get an extra little bit of story because Last of Us 1 got left behind. So maybe they do something for that. But yeah, I feel like, you know, it is just one of those things where they'll try and see what they can get away with first. Question from Zach, who says, what are your comfort games that you can always go back to and relax to? Do they change depending on your mood? I think mine would have to be Banjo-Kazooie. I love throwing it on and living in the world with YouTube or something else on in the background. Hashtag two screen gang. I love the two screen gang. Sai, I've never asked your thoughts on this, but I don't think, maybe I have and my mind's forgotten, but are you a two screen fan? Do you have multiple feeds on?
No, I think I've talked about this before where it's just like, if you've got something else on while you're playing the game, I don't know what you're doing, what's gone wrong in your life, you know? If you've played a game before, in this case, like, that's completely fine. Like, but for a fresh experience, I cannot get behind putting your music on or whatever.
Sometimes it's just, you know, you're doing open world side quests.
Yeah, if you're doing a grind or whatever, it's not so bad. But, like, I just can't. Some people do it, you know, on their first thresh playthrough or whatever.
Some weirdos.
Yeah. One of them in the room.
Can't imagine
right now.
Them. comfort stuff.
I mean, an obvious answer would be just to say my favourite game, because I play it all over the time, which is Resident Evil 2, the original, which shouldn't be a comfort game, really, should it? But, yeah, I mean, it is, because I've played it so many times. But I'm really glad they said Banjo-Kazooie, because it made me think Mario 64 is one of those. It's just something warm. I'm terrible at that game sometimes. I can get really mad at it the later I, you know, the further into that game you get, the easier it is to, like, fall off a cliff and hate your life. But the there is something like, really warm and just, I'm sure it's nostalgia, but, like, that is definitely a game I'll play every few years. And, yeah, it will be cozy.
Mine's like stuff that is sort of a harness to a certain level of nostalgia where it's like intense and it's nigh on time travel. Like I remember like being it's a certain Christmas morning or a certain birthday or a certain year or whatever and everything was okay. Like it was just one of those things. And
the
it's
before
just like,
times.
Yeah, the before times. And it has to be something like that. So it's like Persona 4 or like Mario 64, like you said, is really good, but it would be Crash 3. It would be one of the original PS1 games. There's something about polygonal stuff, especially just PS1 classics that massively take me back. It is weird though, just to throw in, you said about Resident Evil 2, and that's like a weird comfort thing. The first Dark Souls is massively comforting to me. I don't know why, because that game was abrasive as hell, but like after getting through it, and it was such an ordeal to get through the thing, for whatever reason, I just used to put that back on, and it was really easy to just play back through. It's a very comforting style of game. And Josh, I know you played through every single Souls game in a row. There's something about those mechanics that are like, I don't know, you can become almost symbiotically connected to them and just get through a whole bunch of those games with a corresponding podcast or album on or something. But still, there's a way to do that.
Yeah, it's Dark Souls for me as well, to be honest. Like, that's the game that I go back to so often, played through it seemingly endless amounts of times by now. And, like, just exactly what you said there, Scott, you know, it puts you in a certain headspace. It puts you in a certain mechanical rhythm that I find strangely comforting. Now that I've been through it, now that I know all of the secrets and know all of the enemies kind of inside out, I just think, as a world, the almost depressing bleakness and emptiness of it is, I find, weirdly serene. You know, like the lack of music, like I said, the rhythm that it puts you in, not only in the combat, but in the sound effects that are kind of popping off, you know, the familiarity of it, the melody of it, if you will allow me to get a bit pretentious for a second. I don't know. Does something to my brain, and it's just a world that I like to visit now and again.
There's something about taming.
Nah, definitely not.
There is something about like taming such a weird, awkward thing the first time through that then sort of just lets you sit there and kind of just enjoy it. Question from Shuh, unless I haven't copied across their entire word, their entire name, it's just SH is what I've got down here. After finally completing all the mainline Final Fantasies, what spin-offs would you recommend to dive into? And I included this because, Sai, you're also a Final Fantasy fan. Any of the spin-offs other than Tactics? Because my mind goes to like Dirge of Cerberus, and I'm not going to recommend that to
you. Don't
anyone.
Do that to someone. Tactics is, I think, the obvious one. Also, let me expand on that first. But just like, if you were a fan of 12, you may well like Tactics. It takes place in that world. It has a lot of similar music and just like, it's...
Does that spin-off one as well?
Revenant Wings, it's a DS game. I remember buying that, playing it for a bit, and then just like giving it to someone. So I wouldn't recommend that, clearly. But I mean, as well, props for getting through all the mainline Final Fantasy games. I've grown up with that series, and I've not played them all, so, you know.
Well, so right now, I don't know if Shirt has also gone through them, but I've recently, this year, I just played all of them. All of them. The only ones I haven't done now are 2 and 3 and 5. But I've mapped over all the rest of them because all the Pixel remasters are out now. And I recommend the original, to be honest, but in the Pixel remaster form, not the original.
Right, right.
That's weird. But the Pixel remaster of the original is brilliant.
The other one for spin-off to recommend is any of the rhythm games. Because especially if you've played all the series now, you may well be familiar with the soundtracks. And they are just rhythm games based on Final Fantasy music. They are ludicrously simple. But Final Fantasy, in terms of... if you had to pick one franchise with the best music, full stop, it's absolutely in the conversation because it's got that giant legacy and history that you to pick into. And I think the recent one, is it called Curtain Call? It came out this year.
I was
going to
say, it's Final Bar Line is the one.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I haven't got it yet. I'm waiting for it to sort of be on sale before I pick it up.
Oh, it's heaven.
admittedly, because I played the other two and I'm not paying full price for just another one with more songs in, admittedly. But the song, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs in there. I'm so excited to get it one day.
Oh, honestly, I feel what I traded in to get that, barely knowing what it was, but just going, oh, you can play the Final Fantasy music? That's cool. And like, I just came from the Final Fantasy Cafe in Tokyo. So I was like, well, I want to do a whole Final Fantasy thing. And I was playing the old games, the Pixel remasters, then I would finish one of the games and then go into Theatrhythm and play through the soundtrack and then just go to another game and keep going. But Theatrhythm Final Bar Line, I think it was on our most overlooked games of the year that we did a video on a few weeks ago, just because playing through that entire 30-year catalogue is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Can't recommend it enough. Final question from Juan Castaneda, who says, what game do you love in theory, story, direction, voice acting, etc., but it's let down by its gameplay? For me, I love Yakuza Judgment. What the? That's me adding what the hell. But it is let down by its repetitive gameplay and world. I regret reading this question now, Juan Castaneda. I can't believe you've done this.
Wow, after so many years of you recommended me this game, Scott, like it's suddenly got to the bottom of the pile now.
Juan Castaneda casting judgment more like.
That's a great question. Here. I mean, I feel like there are so many you're trying to get through right now, and I hate to say it, I'll think of a better one, but it's Final Fantasy 16.
Can I guess yours?
Right now.
Yeah,
unfortunately, like that's a game that I think of fondly, but didn't necessarily enjoy playing for its duration. Anyway, there was a lot of sections within that game that I didn't quite vibe with. But more so, it was actually Final Fantasy VII Remake, a game that now I love. But playing it, I did not love. There were so many sections of that game where I just wanted to rage quit. But now I will recommend it to everyone and say what a great game it was. It's weird how that works, isn't it? It's funny.
Sometimes about like when you hit credits and you look back on the whole thing, once you're free of whatever that thing was that was annoying you, it can like meet stuff out a little bit. Not in Returnal's case. Still hate it. But it depends what it was. Sai, do you have anything that the gameplay lets it down?
Oh, God. Here we go. let's do it. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. And I've definitely alluded to this in the past. And this is me saying that I personally don't get on with these games. I'm not saying they're terrible because we spent the podcast talking about how great and how comfy they are. I just don't care and don't enjoy Soulsborne games whatsoever. any of them at all that I've played. I tried them. Bloodborne was one of the ones that was free on the PlayStation Plus thing or whatever at one point. And especially the style of that game looks incredible, and I'd probably love the sort of deep and dark lore of it all and the mystery and stuff like that. It looks great. I put 2 hours into it, and it was the most miserable 2 hours of gameplay of my life. I just couldn't get on with it. And that's, you know, skill issue. That's a me problem, whatever. Like, it's clearly not for me. I've tried. I want to enjoy it, but yeah, it's nice to look at. I'd probably enjoy watching someone play it. I just can't I just cannot get on with it.
I remember, was Elden Ring last year? My memory cannot process time. Elden Ring was last year, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember our editor, Dan Durkin, saying that, because obviously everyone was recommending that game, and he played it for about 20, 25 minutes. He kept trying to fight that first boss over and over again. He was like, this is horrible. This is the most horrible thing I've ever interacted with. It's very easy to bounce off that stuff.
Dan record, we did a chatty face for something, and I can't remember. It was the video game controversial opinion that's going to get you, you know, thrown off the channel, or whatever the title was. And watching him complain about Elden Ring and everyone else like shouting him down, and I'm standing there like, Dan's right.
Oh, it happens. You should do an endurance run at some point for charity or something.
Oh, that sounds fun.
If I could interject, I think I've got one, and it's Obsidian's Alpha Protocol, which on paper is an interesting spy RPG, but in practice has a lot of issues with the combat and the structure and a lot of bugs as well. And that's one where the components are there. You know what I mean? Like, it should be something you can love. And a lot of people do love it, but definitely in spite of its flaws. It's one that I love watching video essays on, and I love watching people play through, but can never commit to going through the entirety of it itself, because I just bounced straight off it when I actually tried all those years ago.
I, like, you know when you're a bit younger, or sometimes, I don't know, sometimes you love a game so much that you just can't believe that certain part of it is just bad. Like, I had that with Alpha Protocol, where the aiming is terrible. Yeah. Like, it's always like 9 times out of 10 you'll just miss, because aiming is a dice roll. So even if you're right next to someone, it has to do a roll to see if the bullet would actually connect. And I always remember just thinking, like, well, you know, you're like a rookie, so it's like you're like new to shooting or whatever, so that's fine. And I forced myself through all of Alpha Protocol. I still love that game, and I was always hoping that after Obsidian went to Microsoft or Xbox, that they would put it back out again and like touch it up, do a sequel, do something. It was in their highlight reel when they got bought. But yeah, Alpha Protocol is a great shout, because that game's gameplay is a bit of a mess. I think for mine, I'll just have Wanted Dead again, because I've tried that game twice. I've installed it, played for about 10 minutes. I would want to play it, love to play more, but I can't get past that first level. I keep dying. It kicks me back to the start. And then I'm just like, this feels like actual death. And I delete it and I reinstall it again. I'm like, no, it must be me. And it's not. It's the game, Josh. It's the game.
We will talk more about that on Monday, my friend, whether you like it or not.
The game is a thing. I definitely want to address it more. I miss the golden age of the dead to rights, the dark sectors of the world, and I wish there were more of them.
That was a great era, wasn't it, for games that are good in theory but not necessarily good in practice, you know, where they had all of these cool original ideas, really fascinating gimmicks, and then they played like everything else, and it's like, ah, you were so close. With a bit more development time, you could have had something here.
It was like the era of the Space Marine, like the Take Cover Space Marine.
Yeah.
It was there, that Fracture game and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
For now, though, this has been the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. I've been joined by Cy White.
Please don't hate me.
We never could. And Josh Brown.
Please don't hate me either.
Feel free to hate me, and we'll catch you throughout the week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.